And now, Religion and Science by Bertrand Russell. First chapter, Grounds of Conflict. Religion and science are two aspects of life, of which the former has been important as far back as we know anything of our human mental history, while the latter, after a fitful, flickering existence among the Greeks and Arabs, suddenly sprang into importance in the 16th century, and has ever since increasingly moulded both the ideas and the institutions among which we live. In what follows, we shall not be concerned with science in general, or with religion in general, but with those points where they have come into conflict in the past, or still do so in the present time. These conflicts have been of two kinds. Sometimes they concern religious assertions refuted by scientific observation, which cause difficulty for those who believe. When these assertions have no inherent religious importance, it is not difficult to explain them away or to avoid controversy. There is, however, a deeper conflict when science controverts some important dogma or some philosophical doctrine which theologians believe essential to orthodoxy. The disagreements between religion and science were, at first, of the former sort, but gradually became more and more concerned with matters which were considered a vital part of religious teaching. The way in which science arrives at its beliefs is quite different from that of theology. Science starts not from large assumptions, but from particular facts discovered by observation or experiment. From a number of such facts, a general rule is arrived at. This rule is not positively asserted, but is accepted, to begin with, as a working hypothesis. If it is correct, certain hitherto unobserved phenomena will take place in certain circumstances. If it is found that they do take place, that so far confirms the hypothesis. If they do not, the hypothesis must be discarded, and a new one must be invented. However many facts are found to fit the hypothesis, that does not make it certain, although in the end it may come to be thought in a high degree probable. In that case, it is called a theory rather than a hypothesis. A number of different theories, each built directly upon facts, may become the basis for a new and more general hypothesis, from which, if true, they all follow. And to this process of generalization, no limit can be set. Science is always tentative, expecting that modifications in its present theories will sooner or later be found necessary, and aware that its method is one which is logically incapable of arriving at a complete and final demonstration. But in an advanced science, the changes needed are generally only such as serve to give slightly greater accuracy. The old theories remain serviceable where only rough approximations are concerned, but are found to fail when some new minuteness of observation becomes possible. Moreover, the technical inventions suggested by the old theories remain as evidence that they had a kind of practical truth, up to a point. Science thus encourages abandonment of the search for absolute truth and the substitution of what may be called technical truth, which belongs to any theory that can be successfully employed in inventions or in predicting the future. Technical truth is a matter of degree. A theory, from which more successful inventions and predictions spring, is truer than one which gives rise to fewer. Knowledge ceases to be a mental mirror of the universe and becomes merely a practical tool in the manipulation of matter. But these implications of scientific method were not visible to the pioneers of science, who, though they practiced a new method of pursuing truth, still conceived truth itself as absolutely, as did their theological opponents. The conflict between theology and science was a conflict between authority and observation. Those in science did not ask that propositions should be believed because some important authority had said they were true. On the contrary, they appealed to the evidence of the senses and maintained only such doctrines as they believed to be based upon facts which were patent to all who chose to make the necessary observations. The new method achieved such immense successes, both theoretical and practical, that theology was gradually forced to accommodate itself to science. There is, however, one aspect of religion, and that perhaps the most desirable, which is independent of the discoveries of science, and may survive whatever we may come to believe as to the nature of the universe. Religion has been associated not only with creeds and churches, but with the personal life of those who felt its importance. In the best of the saints and mystics, there existed in combination the belief in certain dogmas and a certain way of feeling about the purposes of human life. The person who feels deeply the problems of human destiny, the desire to diminish the sufferings of humanity, and the hope that the future will realize the best possibilities of our species, is nowadays often said to have a religious outlook, however little he may accept of traditional religion. Insofar as religion consists in a way of feeling, rather than in a set of beliefs, science cannot touch it. Perhaps the decay of dogma may, psychologically, make such a way of feeling temporarily difficult, because it has been so intimately associated with theological belief. But this difficulty need not endure. In fact, many free thinkers have shown in their lives that this way of feeling has no essential connection with a creed. No real excellence can be inextricably bound up with unfounded beliefs. And if theological beliefs are unfounded, they cannot be necessary for the preservation of what is good in religious outlook. To think otherwise is to be filled with fears as to what we may discover, which will interfere with our attempts to understand the world. But it is only in the measure in which we achieve such understanding that true wisdom becomes possible.